Open Science Talk, the podcast about open science. My name is Per Piffinaspos. Today I'm here to talk about national funds for Diamond Open Access, and we have examples from Finland, Canada, and the Netherlands. So first of all, we have Sami Siirimäki from TSV in Finland. So welcome, Sami.
Thank you so much.
And then we have from Canada, we have Jessica Dallaire-Clark representing Erudit.
Welcome. Hello. Thank you.
And then we have Jeroen Sondervan from NWO in the Netherlands. Welcome.
Yes, thank you. Happy to be here.
The reason why I invited you is that you all work on different kinds of national funding mechanisms for Diamond Open Access. And just to remind our listeners what that is, it's a kind of open access where the public can get free access to what our researchers publish, and also the authors themselves, the researchers, they don't have to pay to be allowed to publish. So it's a kind of, there's other kinds of funding mechanisms making it easier for the researchers and also for the public to access everything afterwards. You have, as I said, different funding mechanisms in these three countries. Sami, you represent TSV in Finland. What is TSV, and how are you involved in publishing?
Hello. TSV. It's Tieteellisten seurojen valtuuskunta, is actually in English Federation of Finnish Learned Societies, and I'm here the head of publishing or publishing services. And I lead a team which is responsible for publishing services for Finnish learned societies. And our work includes managing the national open access platforms, journal.fi and edition.fi, academic big bookshop, Tiedekirja, and international exchange of scholarly literature. And I'm also secretary of grant committee, which allocates governmental subsidies for scholarly journals. And that's how I am here involved in also in this Diamond funding.
Great. So you are like an umbrella organization, like gathering all the different learned societies in Finland and helping them publish their work. Is that basically it?
Yes, basically it. We have about 300 member societies, of which about 130 of 40 publish books or journals.
Super. And then we have Erudit in Canada. And as far as my French can take me, Erudit means learned. So you are also into learned societies, I guess, Jessica.
Yes, we do work with some learned societies. So Erudit is Canada's national platform for the dissemination of scholarly journals. And we specialize in the humanities and social sciences. So we have over 260 actively publishing scholarly journals on our platform, the majority of which are Diamond Open Access. So somewhere in the neighborhood of 185 Diamond Open Access journals disseminate their content with us. We're based out of the University of Montreal in Quebec, and Erudit is supported by a consortium of universities, which includes our host, University of Montreal, as well as Université Laval and Université du Québec à Montréal. So we're definitely a university-based initiative. I am the senior coordinator for the development of open access, and my main portfolio is the development of our partnership for open access. It's a funding initiative for our scholarly journals. So all of the active scholarly journals on our platform benefit from this, including the Diamond Open Access journals. And it's basically an alternative to a traditional license agreement between us and consortial partners. So it was first established 10 years ago with our national consortium in Canada, the Canadian Research Knowledge Network, or CRKN, because we shared this hope that we could transition Canadian journals towards open access without APCs. In 2014, nobody was really talking about Diamond open access per se yet, but we were already seeing the sort of negative impact that APCs were having on scholarly dissemination. So 10 years later, we've just renewed this this major agreement with our Canadian partners. We also have partners in Europe, and we have been able to help 40 journals transition to Diamond Open Access. So we feel like our model has a lot of potential. I don't think any of the commercial publishers could say that they've flipped such a high proportion of their journals under their pay-to-publish open access models. So there you go.
Thanks, and that's a nice transition to you, Jeroen, because you represent NWO. First of all, what is NWO? And second, could you tell us about your fund for flipping journals while we're at it?
Yes, thank you. Yeah, so NWO is the National Research Council of the Netherlands, the Dutch Research Council. And we are the largest research council. There is a sister council who's more into medical research, but we have an annual research spend of almost €1 billion a year to support research and infrastructure, research infrastructure. And my role within the Dutch Research Council is being, on the one side, the policy officer for open access. And then we have also in the Netherlands now running for 2 years and will run for another 8 years. This is a national initiative to support open science. The initiative is called Open Science NL. And that's really a 10-year program to progress on open science. So many aspects, so fair data, open research software, but also open scholarly communication, open access, but also societal engagement and citizen science. So a lot of topics are covered in that specific temporary and also funded program. We work together with a lot of stakeholders in the research area in the Netherlands, so data repositories, universities of applied sciences, and technical infrastructures. So it's a really, really large endeavor, I would say, to engage with open science. But my role within the Dutch Research Council, being a policy advisor on open access, is really to support, of course, our grantees in their aims and the abilities to publish open access. But we also, as NWO, as a strategy, we want to really support equitable models and transparent communication models in publishing. So that's why we have engaged already for a longer time supporting several Diamond open access initiatives like publishers, for instance, SciPost, but also Open Library of Humanities. What we also did is supporting our national, we call it the national platform, openjournals.nl. It's similar to what in Finland journals.fi is, basically the national platform to support journals and Diamond journals specifically. So this platform is really only aimed to help and support editorial boards to publish their journals in fully Diamond open access. And just recently we came up, so this is the infrastructural support we give, and that's also partly structural budget, right, within the Research Council. And another initiative just recently launched is through a grant, is this flipping journals to Diamond open access. Basically, it's really an experiment, I would say. The deadline will be in 1.5 months from now, so the 15th of May. So then I can report back on the enthusiasm or the amount of applications we've received at that point. But this call for proposals is really meant to support editorial boards coming from closed or hybrid, so basically in principle closed access journals, to flip to a Diamond Open Access model. It really is, yeah, you can consider it as a lot of journals are now looking into how to flip. We have seen quite some examples. Lingua from Glossa is one of the maybe the most visible examples run by Johan Rorijk. But we've seen many other flips as well. We really wanted to sort of find a mechanism or try to experiment with a mechanism how we can sort of incentivize editorial boards to make this flip. It is really meant as a sort of extra push in the back, right? So it's a 50K maximum grant. The project should run for 2 years and the money can be spent not on everything, but it basically says if you have you need to have legal counseling, for instance, that's eligible for funding as well. If you want to transfer and it needs to have support from specific services, that's also allowed. In principle, the journal needs to become a non-profit Diamond Open Access journal. And we didn't want to be too prescriptive about specific, because still Diamond Open Access and also the principles of Diamond Open Access are discussed in different levels on different levels, so we didn't want it to be like very prescriptive, but one of the essentials is the journal itself needs to transfer to a non-profit Diamond Open Access environment, I would say. And how? There are many ways. So I have a publishing background myself, and I've been working at Utrecht University for quite some time, running our library journal program. At some point, we had 16, 17, 18 journals, of which only one didn't have a Diamond Open Access model, but the others were having a Diamond Open Access model, and basically 14, 15 different funding models, right? So I think we can't be too prescriptive on specific things. We need to see what works and what doesn't work. And hopefully this call will help also others by reporting on the outcomes of the call to help others finding ways in transitioning to Diamond.
That's interesting to see how many journals will hand in applications and how it will work out. So maybe we will invite you back to this podcast in a year or two to hear the experiences that you've had. But I guess you, Sami, you already had some experience, because in Finland you have been handing out money to the editors or the societies editing Diamond journals for some time by now.
The history is actually such that we have for many years given or shared about 600,000 euros annually to subsidize non-profit scholarly journals. The total amount of for scholarly publications is slightly bigger, but that includes monographs and small subsidies for international engagement and collaboration. Last year, we actually did manage to get an extra 100,000 euros. And that was allocated to support under-researched Diamond Open Access journals. We actually do have most of our journals are Diamond Open Access. But here, by under-resourced, we mean journals with an annual budget of no more than 8,000 euros. So you can guess that this rely heavily on voluntary work with that kind of budget. So. And to be in general eligible for this kind of funding, this journal has to be non-profit. If a journal generates profit, an amount equivalent to that profit will be or must be repaid. We're gonna come after you if you do start a business here. So this is the second year. The call is currently open, and we're waiting what will happen. We will somehow need to integrate these two calls, because it's double work for to manage two cores, and we will have to find a way to integrate this diamond model into the general core somehow, and so that we don't have to do the double work. But in general, as I mentioned, the percentage of Diamond open access journals from the journals that we share some funding is 80 or 90%, between 80 and 90%. So you don't have much to gain anymore in that sense, except there are some journals that are not published by scholarly societies, but the number is not that big, and they may not be diamond, but I know that even those are not business journals. I mean, they don't make profit. It's very hard in Finland for a scholarly journal to make profit.
Yeah. So when you say Finnish journals, you mean journals where the society behind that journal is a Finnish society?
Yes.
How then about Erudit? I mean, you could make a division between lifting journals that already exist, like Sami mentioned, journals that have very little budget. They need a little bit of pocket money to sort of lift their standard a little bit. And the other is the flipping, what Jeroen told about this existing commercial journals that would want to flip to a non-commercial model. What do you generally do at Erudit? Do you do both, or...?
I would say that we probably do more of the former. Because of the nature of policies in Canada, most Canadian journals operate with we would call it a subscription model, to be clear. Like, they still have subscriptions, but they are in a delayed open access. So government policy for about 10 years has required funded researchers to publish their research in open access with no more than a 12-month embargo. So most of our journals have been operating this way, meaning they're only charging subscriptions for their most recent access to their most recent content. And over time, we've seen with support mechanisms like ours, the Partnership for Open Access, the idea that these journals and some that are maybe less reliant on their subscription revenue, they see that there is an opportunity to receive some revenue while flipping to Diamond Open Access. They can weigh, you know, that against the opportunities that they gain by being in fully open access in terms of readership and attracting new authors and things like that. Our program right now provides around $4,000 a year to our open access journals. Our journals that still operate with subscriptions receive varying amounts based on their own subscription rates that they get to set with us. But for our Diamond Open Access journals, it's kind of a flat fee, and they all receive around $4,000 a year, which is not, we acknowledge, it's not enough to run an open access journal over the course of the year. There are other funding programs, government funding programs in Canada. There's a federal funding program for scholarly journals, and some of them have access to that money. There's a provincial funding program in the province of Quebec, and some of them have access to that money. But only about a third of our journals get that that provincial funding. And so the other ones who are in Diamond Open Access are relying on the small amount of money we can provide, plus volunteer labor, institutional support, whether that's financial or in kind. It's kind of a patchwork situation. And so we're really hoping that over the coming years that we can increase the money that we return by engaging more libraries in our partnerships, but that we can also coordinate our system of funding in Canada a little bit more so that there's a greater coverage for the actually relatively high number of Diamond Open Access journals that we have. There's about 450 actively publishing Diamond Open Access journals in Canada, I think it's somewhere around like 65% of all of the Canadian journals. So we actually have a really high Diamond adoption rate. So I think that the objective for the sort of next 10 years is how can we ensure that our Diamond Open Access journals receive some support for their operations so that they can continue into the future? Like, it's really a question of sustainability, because if there's, you know, really kind of unsustainable labor with all volunteers, you know, these journals won't exist long term. And that's really our goal, is that Diamond Open Access is sustainable long term.
Yes, sustainable long term. And the next question then is, who is actually eligible? I mean, what is a Canadian journal? You have, in contrast to Finland, where they have kind of small languages on a global scale, Finnish, Swedish, Sami, these are really small languages, of course, compared to French and even more so English. So if we had an English language journal for Canadian studies, let's say so, in Norway, let's say that existed, would that be eligible for funds, or would you say no? The Norwegians interested in Canada, they must fund their own journal.
I would love at some point to go and collect all of the international Canadian studies journals and have them on ARUD. That's sort of been like a pet idea of mine for a while, but we actually follow the guidelines of the funding programs, the government funding programs for journals that I mentioned. So they actually have pretty clear definitions of what counts as a Canadian journal. So the editorial board has to have at least 1/3 of its composition of researchers based at a Canadian post-secondary institution, or be owned by a Canadian organization, which could include a university, a scholarly society, or some other body that is legally based in Canada. So that's how we define Canadian at the moment. But I love your idea of having the Norwegian Journal of Canadian Studies on our platform someday.
Yeah, let's just bear in mind that was a fictional example, but
I... Oh, I know, yeah. I know. But they do exist, they do exist.
Right. How about this definition of a Dutch journal then? I guess you must be affiliated somehow with the Dutch landscape in order to apply for this flipping fund.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically, it's very simple. We have in our subsidy requirements, we have a list of eligible institutions that can receive funding from the Dutch Research Council. So basically, the main applicant needs to have an affiliation with one of these institutions, which are a lot. So all universities, but also the universities of applied sciences and many other organizations. But that said, it can be like an international journal. So it can even be a Norwegian sitting in a Norwegian context, but it has, in this case, a research affiliated to a Dutch institution which is eligible for funding. They can apply as well. So and that was deliberate to really not only look at the national or the very tiny local context, but also try to at least be helpful to international journals. Of course, supporting journals that have a specific interest in the Dutch landscape, for instance, and which are of importance, they are encouraged, of course, to apply. That's of course obvious. But international journals with an editorial board member of at least 1 year sitting in the editorial board and affiliated with a Dutch institution is eligible for funding. Yes.
Yes, and the Diamond Open Access model is we've talked a little bit about it sort of implicitly. Like very often, it hits well for the humanities, social sciences that are sort of they're not used to think commercially about their research. They don't collaborate that much with the industry, and there is not so much not so common that the industry would want to have their collaboration either, because they work more in basic humanities, for instance. And these funding programs, some of them worldwide, are targeting specifically humanities and social sciences to kind of lift them. But if we would want to target more like the STEM disciplines, do you have any experiences of that kind of initiatives within your countries?
Not in Finland, but we have a general agenda, so any journal may apply. It's not specially for humanities and social sciences, but there ain't too many from STEM disciplines in Finnish or Finnish journals.
As I mentioned before, ARUD as an organization specializes in the humanities and social sciences, but we're beginning to see more of a need to support Diamond Open Access journals in other disciplines. There are sort of, vanguard actors in those disciplines who are going out and starting or running Diamond Open Access journals. So we're thinking more about how to support those journals. One interesting initiative coming out of Quebec is that, and this goes to the language issue that you were just discussing. In Quebec, there's a really strong movement for La Science en Français, the idea that Francophone researchers should be encouraged and rewarded for publishing in French, that the dominance of English in scholarly communication at this moment poses risks to sort of making research inaccessible for Canada's French-speaking population. And the group that runs the funding program for scholarly journals in Quebec has actually just launched a call for to create two new journals in French, specifically in the STEM disciplines. So I'm very curious to see what comes out of that program and whether we will establish new, specifically French language journals in, say, medicine or physics or some other engineering, perhaps, in a zone that we haven't actually had those publications for a while. So it's going to be exciting to see what happens there.
Yeah, just I think talking about the call itself, it's open to everyone. So not only for the humanities, social sciences, all disciplines can apply for funding in this specific call I explained. But I think also, indeed, I agree that there's more attention on Diamond in specifically humanities, social sciences, and maybe some other areas like law and these kinds of disciplines. But it also has to do with the prestige question, right? So I think in the STEM, it's really still driven by impact factors and monopolization and prestige, which is also very much taken up in the publishing, in the commercial publishing business, as a way of attracting authors and even more authors, starting new journals, building towards more prestige, etc., etc. And this is not so much happening in the humanities and social sciences. And the diversity of the languages and the many more aspects of doing research. There's a wide variety of methodologies and so yeah, it's almost incomparable, I would say, with what's happening in the STEM disciplines and how they publish, and they is also very large and also very diverse as well. I would be interested to see what will be happening in our call. Will we see again lots of interest from the humanities and social sciences? Yes, I think so, but it would be interesting to see if we receive also proposals from other disciplines. We have seen some of these flips, and neuroimaging, I think it was called, was an important flip 2 years ago, 1.5 years ago. And in the psychology, which is basically within the social sciences, of course, but there's a lot of interest in moving to Diamond as well. And another example in a national context, but which has a global perspective is SciPost, which is in the physics, which is completely community owned. It's built up by Jean-Sebastien Coe, the managing director, completely himself, now runs several journals on their platform. Yeah, and that's physics, and it's diamond, fully diamond, supported by donations. So yeah, you have a lot of examples, I think, if you search for them. Yeah.
The question here is, if you want to flip your journal into diamond, then you need an infrastructure, a place to land, of course, so that the technical things are taken care of and so on. But some journals that are commercially run, they are used to get quite a lot of surplus money from the publisher each year. Like I talked to someone involved in a major journal in biology, and they say, well, our society, we get enough money to hire 3.5 full-time equivalents per year as editorial assistants. That's a lot of money. And they also get roughly 1 million Norwegian kroner, let's say 100,000 euros per year. So that's the kind
of... To support conferences or events or these kinds of things, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's the journal as being a business model to support other work at the association level, right? Or the
And when we start telling these examples and showing them to the humanities editors, poor editors that roughly have you mentioned 8,000 euros per year, Sami, they get envious, don't they? What kind of help do you give them? You can't give them 100,000 euros for conferences, but what kind of sums are we talking about, and how are these supposed to be spent by the societies?
Well, we do have strict rules where what kind of costs they can you use this funding. I'm not going to read through the whole list, but for a small amount can be directed to editors, meeting and training costs, communication costs for publications, and so on. But these are checked every year. And we have, they will have to send actually the official financial documents to us, and we will check through them. So I'm actually in a position to say quite a lot about the economy currently. But what we now are trying to do, first of all, the situation is that no one here has had a big business. So when it flips to diamond, you're not going to run down from 100,000 euros to 5,000 euros. So it's the question is not about not that big. But what we're trying to do at the Federation is that we try to help them in any other way we can. So, for example, journal.fi, the platform, is quite good, and we are helping to develop it all the time within different projects, also involving EU projects, and then offering every kind of help what they want in addition to the financial help. And this is actually one of the challenges that we are facing, since I think also the technical standards are going up, and we will try to do our best to help these journals to fulfill the new DOAS criteria for diamond journals and organize seminars, conferences, and things like that to help them to fulfill these. The problem is that we cannot organize all kind of help, since it doesn't scale up. I mean, and you need a certain amount of work to do the layout. You need a certain amount to do the other technical things. And it's not possible to help with the centralized service, because you would have to just hire more and more people. But some things work this way. So the platform, for example, as such, is one good way to centralize these services.
How about Erudit? How does that work? You have the infrastructure, you have the platform, but you also hand out money. What kinds of mechanisms do we see there?
We do not have strict rules around how our journals are able to spend the money, partly because the POA was meant as a transition from a subscription model. It's very much like the journals are receiving subscription revenue, even though they're in Diamond Open Access. We're also giving out such a relatively small amount of money. One assumes that a Diamond Open Access journal is going to use that for their operations. I can't imagine that anyone's going out and having steak dinners, for example, with the very small amount of money that we're returning. In terms of what we offer as infrastructure and services, absolutely. Much of what Sammy said is very true in our context. Journals that have been with a larger publisher are often used to having a lot of services that they've come to rely on. So making a flip to a Diamond Open Access model is a sort of often seen as just a technical challenge for them. Like, how do I continue doing all of the things that my big publisher used to do for me? ARUD has a partnership with the Public Knowledge Project, which you are hopefully familiar with, is also based in Canada. We call this partnership Coalition Publica, and it's based on the idea that PKP's flagship software, Open Journal Systems, or OJS, and the ARUD platform are interoperable. So when journals come to us and say, I really need to streamline my operations, whether that's in the context of a flip or just editorial changes or just, you know, seeking more efficiency, we recommend that they adopt OJS as their sort of online platform for submissions and editorial management, and as their sort of the host of their website. We're also really fortunate in Canada that we have a large network of library publishers who host OJS. So there's about 40 institutions across Canada that host OJS for journals based at their schools. And so we work with those institutions who will host the journals. Then the journals can use OJS, publish online. Their content will be automatically transferred to ARUD, where it's centralized, put together with a lot of other content, becomes a central access point for users to come and find research. At ARUD, we structure all of this content that comes in from OJS. We curate the metadata, and then we also push it out into a variety of systems where it can be found, including through library-based discovery tools. So we're hoping to provide that sort of, as Coalition Publica, that management and discovery layer that journals need. Unfortunately, what we can't provide, and you know, this goes to what Sammy said, is the other sort of technical services, copy editing and layout being the two most prominent, is really a challenge. Journals have to source those on their own, often using freelancers. And that's really a challenge in the Canadian context. We have a lot of partners who are thinking creatively about how can we support those sorts of services for Diamond OA journals. So I think that might be a zone that we work in the next few years. But it is really a hard nut to crack. I know that from talking with other Diamond OA publishers and infrastructure projects. This whole services layer is really sort of the missing piece.
We ask you finally, Jeroen, beyond the flipping period, you can't probably promise anything on the microphone like this, but do you have some strategies, some visions for the future that flipping an existing journal is a lot of work and a lot of costs also with legal advice you mentioned and so on. But after that, when they start running, will they find a place to find the pocket money, or will they need to to apply to many different kinds of funding streams and hopefully survive?
I think the latter, right? So this is, of course, so this sort of doing it via grants, for instance, it's always temporary because that's how the system works, basically. So at some point, we need to find ways into how to sustainably fund Diamond Open Access in general through, let's say, platforms, infrastructures, and maybe specific allocations for journals at some point, which might be difficult in terms of scaling. So that's why I personally, but also I know Ed, so we have the Finnish platform, we have the Canadian platform. I was involved in the development of the Dutch platform in my previous capacity. And platforms are not the solution, but at least it creates ways for funders or for governments or for institutions or associations to sort of collectively find funds or collectively fund these platforms, plural. So not only the national, hopefully we see others as well, because I think that Diamond is also about diversity in terms of how publishing is being done. Flipping, this is the transitional phase we are in, supporting editorial boards that have a wish, have an aim to fully go for Diamond. But at some point, we need to find layers, nationally, locally, nationally, but also internationally, to create support mechanisms. And not seeing, so that's my, so in some cases or in many cases, Diamond Open Access is still perceived as a business model. Like it's a business model. I don't like that. It's a funding model, right? It's a way of creating funding. And if you consider it like this, then it maybe enables also libraries, but also other stakeholders to really support Diamond Open Access in a more sustainable way instead of one by one or project by project. We need to get rid of those ad hoc things. But we are not there yet because, how long will this transition take? Years, possibly decades. But also, Diamond is not like the end station, right? It's just an alternative, creating an alternative to an existing, more coming from the traditional closed access, prestigious publishing, creating alternatives. People can make use of it, but we won't get rid of the old traditional prestigious publishing anyway. That's a very big wish, I think. So it's creating the good alternatives, making them sustainable, that people have an alternative if they are able to do and to take the jump.
How do you think about these things, Sami? Creating an alternative or changing the entire landscape?
I think it's utopia to change the whole landscape. What I hope is that the big companies like Elsevier and others would kind of rethink their prices, and we could continue with that. But this is, of course, I don't know. I would like to see everything to be published Diamond model.
Don't get me wrong. I'm
afraid. I'm afraid that's won't happen. But we should find ways, and maybe the Diamond success of Diamond model could be one way of making these big companies to rethink their policies. I don't know. I hope so.
I see you nodding, Jessica, in this.
In my work, I'm not sure. I tend to agree with Sami. I think trying to change the entire landscape is perhaps too idealistic, though I would love to see that reality. I prefer to think about looking beyond the very subjective discourse around prestige, which is, you know, directly related to profit-seeking models, and see all of the excellent work that's being done and has been done historically by diamond open access journals, or even journals that are working in a nonprofit context, and lift them up and say what they are doing is important and worthy of support. And the more that we can hold up this existing and vibrant alternative for the profiteering models, maybe the more we will see people questioning the profit-seeking model and saying, is this right? Is this the way that we should really be making the results of research available? I really hope that, you know, like in my English language context, you know, someone would read a novel by Dickens written, you know, 175 years ago, and been like, God, we let children work in factories. Like, that's so just wrong that 150 years from now, yep, people will look at us and be like, you guys bought research
for such high prices.
Yeah. And just think that is so wrong. So that's my hope. Yeah. And I hope that I'm contributing to that in some little way.
With this, I thank you all three for coming to this podcast, Jeroen, Jessica, and Sami. This has been a pleasure. Open Science Talk is produced by the University Library of UIT, the Arctic University of Norway. Thanks for listening.